With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Achtung the Wall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners. Welcome to my back garden. Welcome to the rural idyll that is my back garden. I'm breaking every podcast in the rule book by recording out here today. This is just such a warm day. I thought I'd take it to the rear part of the house. There's not that much urban kind of noise going on, but do forgive me if you do get the odd bit of drill or grime music that intrudes on today's random fixture, which is as generated by random.org. 1987. I'm going to take you all the way back to 1987, start of the fabled 1987-88 season of dreams, of course, though we didn't know that when Millwall lost to Bradford City on the 5th of September 1987. We lost up there at Valley Parade by 3-1, unfortunately. This was back at the start of the eventually glorious season. And this was, in fact, the first defeat of the campaign. We'd made an okay start to the season. We'd obviously had a summertime of excitement with the signings of the likes of Tony Cascarino and George Lawrence, and others by Reg Burr. So there had been a generation of excitement as the season began. But opening day fixtures like Middlesbrough and away draw, League Cup draw against Orient, a win against Barnsley at home, which was a good start, and then an away loss at Leicester. A win against Birmingham on the 1st of September. I remember that game quite well. I was at that game, win against Birmingham. But then this kind of slightly gutty away loss at Valley Parade the week after. So we went up to Yorkshire mid-table when we were really planning or hoping to be certainly top six after the signings of that glorious summertime. So this result left us in 12th position on 7 points, under, of course, the joint management, the best manager we ever had, John Docherty, assisted by Frank McClintock. We'll come back to John Docherty in a little bit. Frank McClintock, of course, was a member of the Arsenal double-winning side in 1970-71, Scottish international, and a very solid joint manager with the Doc. The Millwall team, dear listeners, on this loss-making afternoon, in goal, Brian Horn, back line, Sean Sparham. We'll return to Sean Sparham, one of the lesser-known or spoken-about players in these podcast series. Sean Sparham, Alan Walker, Steve Wood, Keith Stevens, Rhino, across the back line. Across the midfield, Danny Salman. I'm going to come back to Danny shortly. With Terry Hurlock, Les Brierley and George Lawrence across the midfield. And up front, the classic Sheringham and Cascarino duo. Subs not used this particular day, 5th of September 1987 subs. Darren Morgan and David Byrne on the bench. Now, as I say, we lost up there this day. It was a moderate start to the campaign, really. We never really got going till post-Christmas, in all honesty, in Division 2. It would finish in us winning the championship at the end of the season, but we were not knowing this at this point. Scoring on this particular game, we went 1 goal down after 12 minutes to a goal by Palin for Bradford. We then went 2-0 down to a 55th-minute Paul Futcher penalty. Remember them, the Futcher brothers? They played at Luton I think they played in America and finished up at Bradford. So Fucha, 55 minutes, put us 2-0 behind. Briefly, we reclaimed a goal back through Terry Hurlock to 2-1 on the 65th minute before another goal for Fucha finished the day's business, made it 3-1 for Bradford in the 69th minute. And that was that for the Lions on this particular away day. The attendance at Valley Parade this day was 8,658. I did wonder when I first looked at the Mill History website whether this was played at Valley Parade, and it was, because the ground, which had obviously been affected by the terrible fire of 1985, had been rebuilt. The main stand, I think, was the old wooden stand, burned down completely with great loss of life, of course. And they had to take up a bit of a nomadic existence afterwards whilst the stadium was reconstructed. I know they played at the Bradford Oddsall Stadium, which is a rugby league, or was, I should say, because I think that's been knocked down now, the Oddsall Stadium. That was rugby league and speedway primarily. I think probably Greyhounds as well in the past, but that's no longer there. And they also played some games at Ellen Road, I was reading. But this was played back at Valley Parade. And as I say, this loss put us 12th. We would recover slightly on the following Saturday, the 12th of September, with a 2-1 win over Ipswich Town in front of just 6,300 at Coldblow Lane. That would put us back into 8th position. But we were very much mid-table, really up as far as the new year, really, when, you know, form started to take hold. So despite the high hopes of summertime, the signatures and the glamour signing, as it was, of Tony Cascarino, as I remember, it really was a sense of real excitement in that summertime. The season start was something of a drab one, in all honesty, and we had a sense it was going to be another typical Millwall season. Little did we know, because obviously in the end it would finish up with the glory days at Hull City, the Championship and promotion to the First Division. But there we are. You never know what's around the corner in football. That noise in the background you can hear is a jet going out of the London City Airport, which has reopened. Anyway, we've picked out three names from this time. Names that we haven't really touched upon on any of the previous nostalgia shows. So I've picked out Danny Salmon to start us off with. A really solid midfielder, of course. Came to us from Brentford in 1986 for a tribunal assessed fee of £20,000, if you can believe that. And the tribunal, for younger listeners, was a Football League panel. I don't know how they assessed these prices, where there was a dispute over a transfer fee. The tribunal would sit in judgment and come up with a figure based on, I don't know what, tea leaves and puffs of smoke from the chairman's chimney, like a Pope or something, things of that kind. So Danny signed for us after an extensive period at Brentford. 335 appearances, in actual fact, over 1975 to 1986. He was known to John Docherty, who had also managed at Brentford and was an ex-Brentford player himself, but more of that in a little bit. But Danny, really, the bulk of his career was spent at Griffin Park. 335 appearances, 8 goals over that 11-year period. He then signed for the Lions for, I think it's fair to say, the height of his career, really, which would prove to be promotion in this particular season that we're talking about today. And then obviously the First Division days up till 1990. It would make 93 appearances for Millwall, scoring 3 goals in that time, before moving on to Plymouth in the 1990-92. 74 appearances there, 4 goals, a brief loan at Peterborough, and he finished his career at Torquay, 20 appearances. 511 league appearances for Danny Salmon, 15 goals over what is a near 20-year career, just 18-year career. He'd actually played for England Youth, 5 caps as an England Youth, and also managed Torquay United Youth Team as a player manager. That clearly didn't take to management. There's no other teams listed as managerial appointments for him after leaving the game. Wikipedia mentions the youth team management spell 1992-93, and he combined that role with the Torquay Youth Development Officer. He became the club's commercial manager in 1993, and as of July 2010, it says he was coaching youth players in the southwest at a soccer school, his own soccer school, working via Plymouth College. He is a sports and body massage therapist and also worked part-time for Plymouth Raiders, which is a men's basketball team. I had to check that, so don't think I've got extensive sports knowledge to know that off the top of my head. Apparently Plymouth Raiders are a men's basketball side. Since retiring from the game, he's also done some work for the Press Association, focusing on Plymouth Argyle matches, and writes a column apparently in the Plymouth Herald newspaper. Dennis, his honours over his career, twofold really. Brentford Football League, fourth division promotion. I don't know if you get a medal for that. You must get some kind of marker for that. That was in 1977-78. And then a championship medal with, obviously, the Lions in the glory season that would follow this match. A 1987-88 second division championship medal. And just to close on what is a really solid football career, I think it's also worth mentioning that Danny Salmon was the Brentford Supporters Player of the Year, 1984-85. The Players Player of the Year in the same season, 84-85. He rests in the resides in the Brentford Hall of Fame. I didn't know there was one, but there is apparently, and he's in there, rightly so. And then Millwall Player of the Year, 1987-88, in this particular season. So that's quite a list of honours for Danny Salmon. A player who I have fond memories of, I'm sure you do too. Anyone of that era, really, I think any of the supporters that followed the Lions in this particular season will have the fondest of memories for all of the squad, which would include Danny's as a very solid mainstay of what would become a promotion-winning side. I remember him as a very hard-working fullback. Sometimes he would stray into midfield. One particular memory which occurs to me was the home game in 88-89 versus Liverpool, where officially at least there was 23,000 in Coldblow Lane. There were more, I think. It was packed, listener. It was packed. If you were there, you know what I'm talking about. I arrived late. I'd cut it fine coming up from Orpington. I was living at the time. Got to the ground after kickoff because it was packed outside. It was packed inside the stadium. I went to the very back of the Coldblow Lane end, couldn't see a thing, if I'm honest. I knew the game was in play by this stage. It would have been nearer to 8 o'clock by this stage. Game had kicked off at 7:45. The Lions scored, and this was a Liverpool team, just to be clear, that I think should have won the European Cup. They were banned from Europe, obviously, in the aftermath of Heysel. But this was a major league Liverpool side featuring John Barnes, John Aldrich, Steve McMahon, Grobbelaar in goal. A classic Liverpool side. Should have been European champions, would have been European champions if they'd been permitted to take part in a competition. And unbelievably, for a Millwall fan of my many, many years, we took the lead against them. Danny Salmon scored. I can tell you nothing about the goal. It was down at the Ilderton Road end. I was at the very back of the Coldblow Lane end, peeping over someone's shoulder, trying to see what I could, and there was very little, apart from the floodlights up in the sky. And we scored, and the ground went into what I can only call mayhem. There was a crowd surge. Younger listeners won't know what I mean by a crowd surge. Old terracing, when a goal would score on near chance, people would surge forwards in a crush, and you would be carried forward. And so I was carried forward. My feet left the ground. I'd never thought it. You hear of such things and you think people are making it up. Until it happens to you, then you believe it. Maybe it's like, I don't know, seeing a ghost or having a religious experience or something, but until it happens to you, you don't believe it. Well, a crowd surge happened to me. I went from the back of the Coldblow Lane end in this surge. I don't know how far I went. It could only have been a few yards, but when you haven't got your feet on the ground, it's quite a worrying experience. And we finished up about 20 feet forwards. Maybe that might be exaggeration, I don't know. But certainly where I finished up, had a great view of the game. I could see, well, I went from seeing nothing to seeing the game pretty much unimpeded, as far as you could ever say unimpeded at the packed Coldblow Lane ground. So we finished up losing it 2-1, but to a majestic Liverpool side, and it was a head-to-head battle. And it was one of the great games I've ever seen, in all honesty, purely because we went toe-to-toe and matched one of the great sides of Europe and therefore world football, and were very unlucky to be beaten on the night. And Danny Salmon opened the scoring for us, and for that reason alone, apart from his solid playing career, solid performance as a defender and midfield, I will never forget Danny Salmon. So thank you Danny's.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to Act on Millwall.
Now, I thought before I come on to John Doherty, I would just touch on Sean Sparham, because he's just a name that you don't hear very often, especially in a podcast context. He was a player, a fullback, that played for us not very long, in actual fact, a career blighted by injury, unfortunately. Sean's always a local boy, born in Bexley, came from the Millwall youth ranks, and I think he was seen as something of a prospect. He made 25 starts for us over 1987, 88, 89, 89, 90. Never really held down a place. So three seasons, 25 starts. A brief loan to Brentford in 89, 90. And then his career was brought to a sudden halt, sadly, through injury. According to Wikipedia, Sean obviously left football and worked as a freelance photographer, which... fair play, photographer and picture editor. As of 2020 in February, it lists him as working as a painter and decorator in Sikkup. So Sean Sparham, one of those players that were solid squad members. I remember him being seen as something of a youth prospect, but he never really got the chance because football can be a cruel game, really. So he did win a championship medal with the Lions in 87-88 this season, and then injury took it away from him. So just wanted to mention Sean Sparham and send him, if he's listening or his family are listening, send him my best wishes, because he was part of one of the great seasons of my life following the Lions. Sean Sparham, listeners. And so to close us, I thought it might be appropriate just to do something on John Doherty, our greatest ever manager, the only Millwall manager ever to achieve top flight football. Many have come close. John Doherty made it. And I just thought it might be worth just doing a short piece on John. Not much gets spoken about him other than the sheer achievement of it. So I thought it might be nice just to do a little piece, a little bit of background on who John Doherty is. He's still alive, born in 1940, born in Glasgow, Scottish man. Came to England to play football. He was played as a right winger, played for Brentford, Sheffield United, Brentford again. This is during the 60s, 1959. Finished his career at QPR after spells with Reading and a couple of spells with Brentford. 317 appearances, 116 goals. So he was a goal-scoring winger, basically. But I think probably he's better known as a manager, and a manager for us in the end. I think it's going to come back to Millwall, really, because that was everyone's crowning achievement. It was his crowning achievement in football management. But he managed also at Brentford, a repeat linkage to that club. And he would take, obviously, Hurlock and Salman from Brentford to great effect, to Coldblow Lane. A five-year spell managing at Cambridge United just prior to being appointed as Millwall manager. That was in 1986 when he joined us when the club was at something of a low ebb. I mean, obviously, we'd just been promoted via George Graham's efforts, and we'd got ourselves into the second division, but it was a struggle. The club were financially stretched. The hooliganism of the time, the name, the tag had been attached to Millwall Football Club, and life as a Millwall fan was not an easy thing. Life for the club financially was not easy. And I'm going to come back to the club relaunching itself in the mid-80s as a community club. I've got a fantastic brochure of the time when Mill relaunched itself under John Doherty's management as Mill in the community, as a community club. It's when you used to get things like the match day crash for kids. The Lionesses began at this time. Efforts to try and start a community trust to reach out and reach local kids, get them into education away from all the bad stuff that happens out there. And John Doherty joined us at this time when the club was, as the brochure says, turning itself into the football club that gave itself back to the people. And I think that's a great line. And John Doherty was at the forefront of that. I'm going to return back to that brochure to close today's show, because I think it is indicative of who John Doherty was as a man as well as a football manager. This need and desire to connect with the fans and to return the club and the sport itself in some ways back to the roots of the game, the supporters on the terracing, and at Mill particularly are very much a working class support base, which I think we retain to this day. Now, John Doherty would of course bring in players like Hurlock. He would sign the likes of Cascarino, work with Sheringham, who was there already, of course, bring in other players for the likes of Jimmy Carter, and produce what we now know as the classic Mill side that would be promoted this particular season. We're referring to 87-88, the fixture we were talking about today, and it would finish in a blaze of glory at the end of the season, winning at Hull City after a long haul. I mean, the season was never cut and dried. Mill don't do things easily. We probably bobbed along in mid-table till Christmas, and then form started to take hold after the Christmas break in the year of 1988. Many people talk about seasons, listeners, 1987-88, 1988-89. For me, in a funny way, sometimes years are more pertinent. I think of 1988 the year, so you're talking about the surge to promotion at the end of 87-88, this season we're talking about, and then the opening adrenaline rush ride of First Division football in 88-89. So if you took one year, 1988, it's a golden year in the memory of any Millwall fan that was there at that time. There is no other year that matters in some ways, I think. Because it was just such a dreamscape of things happening that you never imagined would be possible at the Den, coached by John Doherty. His football style was of its day. It was probably, we always slagged slightly for being direct, a bit like a Wimbledon. And rather like Wimbledon, I think we had better players than we were given credit for, and we played more football than we were given credit for. But because it was Millwall, it was New Cross, Coldblow Lane, the ball was got forwards at the earliest opportunity, just as Jack Charlton did with the Republic of Ireland. The football purists saw us as lumpen proletariat. As I say, apologies for any local noise you hear. The dog was probably agreeing with what I'm saying there, I reckon. In the end, in the First Division, it would all come a little bit awry. The wheels would come off. I think probably the club didn't, replenish its squad to match top flight football. My memory, if you want one memory of the season, really is every game where we were in that kind of adrenaline ride rush, very Millwall situation, but every game felt like a cup tie, backs to the wall. We went top of the table in October 1988. John Doherty took us to the top of the Football League table, unimaginable. But it was, every game was like you were fighting for your life, and it was very Millwall. It's what we live for, is inject it, as they say nowadays. But you couldn't sustain it over the course of a season. When we met the likes of Liverpool, I've referred to already, you came up against real quality, and there was a difference. There was a positional time on the ball, quality difference between the players that they could bring to the party and we could. And in the end, that found us out. So John Doherty would leave us in the disastrous season. Well, it was rock bottom all season, pretty much. Though we did briefly top the table, I say, in 88, 89, 90, sorry. and John Doherty would leave us. We would go on to Bradford City to no great mark. He was sacked there in 1991 before coming back for a very strange brief return spell in 96-97. This was just around the time of the club going into administration at Zampa Road. Again, with no great effect. John Doherty's glory days after a long build-up and then something of a mediocre is too strong a word, an average tail away. But like us all, like any Millwall fan of a certain era, John Doherty's world revolves around the years 1987 to 1990. Those were the years that we achieved heights that we've never achieved since. We hope we can get back there this season. We hope so. But for those of us that lived it, John Doherty, who's now retired, living in Wiltshire, according to Wikipedia, gave us something that we never dreamed possible. And so for that reason alone, we say thank you to John Doherty and wish him a long and happy retirement to come. His honours as a manager, Football League, 4th Division, 3rd place promotion. This was 1971-72. That would have been as a player over Brentford, excuse me. And then obviously the Championship and achievement of 10th position in the First Division, the club's highest ever league position with Millwall in 1987-88, then 88-89. So John Doherty, I just want to close, if I may, if you'll indulge me, by reading a very short quote from the booklet Millwall in the Community. It's written by a journalist called Chris Lightbone, photography by Chris Schwartz. It's iconic stuff in there. Occasionally I'll stick it on Twitter. I will put this on with this particular show. But this is a quote from John Doherty, speaking from the heart. Here, players grew away from fans, he says, not through any will on their part, but just by the evolution of football and the money that came into the game. And that was sad. When league football began, their players were people who had grown up in that area, or they imported players who had lived amongst the fans in that area. And this meant a club's style of football tended to reflect the values of the people from that area. Football, John Doherty says, literally arose from the people. It's a long piece. I won't read it all. But one bit I do like is his job is to give this area, New Cross, Bermondsey, a team it can feel pride in and one that can be successful. He says this is a deprived, hard area that is looked upon as being difficult. There's different times. I still think there's a touch of this to this day. Listeners, you probably agree. So people, outsiders, think that hard and do a team is produced from such an area. Must be the symbol of it. They categorise Millwall in that way. But what I like here is a great sentence. If you look deeper into the community, you see the warmth, you see the friendliness and the sincerity of the people. You have to get those elements into the side as well, into the playing side. It's a mixture. And he goes on to speak about the club's fans liking ball-playing wingers, but players that tend to give 100% with honesty. Great man. Great man, John Doherty. Really captured the essence of what it is to be a Millwall fan. It's a great piece. I will stick it on Twitter. Manager of our greatest ever season. So there we are. Dear listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this little touch on 1987-88. The fixture that we were covering today, strayed a little bit away from it now, but there we are, was a loss, strangely, a very Millwall way to do it, isn't it? 5th of September, 1987, Bradford City 3, Millwall 1, scorer that day, Terry Hurlock from the 65th minute. There we are. The podcast will be back later on this week with Michael and Aaron Paul doing the Real Millwall Fan Show. So have a tune in for that. We'll also have another Lioness show with Ryan later on in this week. But for now, I hope you've enjoyed this little trip down memory lane back to 1987 and the glory days. I can't do Bruce Springsteen's voice, so I won't sing it for you. Arrivederci Millwall. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci Millwall. Till next time.